I'm Jamin Brazil, an entrepreneur best known for starting Decipher, a software solution that gathers consumer feedback for 75% of the Fortune 100, including Netflix, Twitter, and Walmart. Get fresh insights, get inspired, and see what's trending. Join me as we discover together how market research is developing today. Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us today on Happy Market Research Podcast. My guest today is Kristen Luck. Kristen, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So over the last 10 years, that's a decade for those wondering, where have you seen the biggest points of disruption inside of market research?
Well, that's a tough one because, although I think there's been a lot of disruptive technologies and new methods and new players coming into the space, I do feel like this industry moves at a borderline glacial pace.
Right.
In terms of adoption. Yeah.
Totally.
I mean, definitely, the advent from offline to online research was a big disruption. There were companies that had been doing offline data collection for years and years and years and years. And, although there still is quite a bit of offline data collection, particularly in emerging markets, I think for the most part, when people think about research surveys these days, they think about online data collection methods. From my perspective, the next big piece of disruption really is in the data delivery and data reporting, and that's where I see kind of the most innovation and the most focus on not only on new techniques and new methods for deriving insights more quickly, but that's where I also see the most M&A activity, and certainly the highest valuations for firms are coming out of the BI space. And I would say that I think that's another aspect that a lot of people overlook in terms of what's driving change is 10 or 15 years ago, it was really rare that you would hear about, big PE firm coming into the market research space and making a big investment. And these days, particularly I think when people are seeing valuations and PE firms are seeing the impact of data and the amount of data available and how that can be monetized, that there's so much more attention on the market research space than there ever was before. And so now we're seeing a lot of these big PE firms coming in and making major investments, and firms that, 10 years ago maybe wouldn't have thought about selling, really looking at, how are they going to use technology and data insights to drive a valuation and an M&A event.
So let's kind of dig in here. This issue of data, if you think about where the value has been traditionally provided for market research or by market research companies, it's been on the delivery of the data, right? So it's the brand has a question, and then we go through a bunch of logistics in order to gather and interpret that data. The interpretation, I'd say, honestly, I'd be surprised it's 5% of the actual time investment for most companies. Again, I'm broad swatch there. One of the things I've seen with BI, and I'm interested in if you're in agreement here, is that the data logistics, so the gathering of the insight, has moved less away from research and more to internal systems that the companies are developing. Are you seeing that trend?
Yeah, I mean, when I think of business intelligence, I think of it more holistically than just primary market research, where we're collecting data and kind of shoveling it through a reporting system. I mean, I think there's so many sources of data now that we didn't traditionally have access to. There's point of sale data and social media data and passively collected data. And I think that companies are really struggling from almost like a glut of data and not knowing how to use it in the most meaningful ways or what it really means for their business. And so that's where I see a lot of focus on the BI space. I think the interesting thing for me when I look at traditional market research firms is, as you alluded to, a lot of the traditional full service market research financial models have been based on an immense amount of revenue coming out of data collection work. When I first started out in research, pretty much all research was conducted on the phone or in person, and all of that work would be outsourced, and then there'd be, 40 to 60% margin on it. And then oftentimes the smallest part of the actual proposal that went to the client in terms of time and expense was on the analytics, which which now for research firms is what really drives value for clients. And so I think for market research firms, it's really rethinking those business models and what is going to drive growth in the industry moving forward. And case in point, if you look at the SMR GMR, which is the big annual global market research study that looks at industry growth, last year in 2017, I can't remember what the growth rate was, like a 2% increase in research revenues, but it's quite deceptive. Like if you take out any kind of research like web tracking and some of the newer research methods out of that, and you just look at what has been traditionally defined as market research, the industry is actually in decline overall. And you can see this in the earnings report from like Ipsos and, you know, the big acquisition that Ipsos just made is like all the custom research divisions of GfK. I think we're going to see more retraction in the industry in terms of traditional market research and more mergers and acquisitions and those business models continuing to change pretty dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, a really good, this is a perfect example. Amazon some years ago brought to market an RFP where they were looking for an in-house survey platform, to bring a survey platform in-house, I should say. And they ultimately decided that they were just going to go ahead and build that capability themselves. It would be cheaper as well as scalable. So the implication there is so massive, right? Because not only has market research from a technology been disrupted, but on top of it, the role, you know, what is the role of what is, to your point, been the primary market researcher, and how's that even being displaced? Because primary market research or research in general hasn't brought a strong point of view on basic things like social media and how that should be incorporated into the brand discussion.
Yeah, well, and I think that there's a certain amount of discomfort around data sources that do not come from primary data collection. I think there's not a whole lot of knowledge around how to work with that data or how to implement, you know, and I think some of the smarter market research firms and acquisitions I see are firms like Kantar and MarketCast who are either making investments or buying up firms that specialize in that type of research without, you know, sort of ripping them apart and destroying them, but really, really making sure that they're using the technology and the knowledge that those firms have developed to help enhance their more traditional market research practices.
So switching gears from disruption, what do you see the industry doing well and where do you see room for improvement or opportunities for growth moving into the future?
What do I think the industry is doing well? I mean, I do think that there is, you know, a lot of conversation and focus on, you know, more consultative, analytically driven work. I think that there is an understanding that most market research firms technologically cannot move fast enough to kind of outpace every new startup that's coming into the space. In many cases, very well-funded startups that have a lot of new methods and new ways, and that the value add for research firms is obviously going to be in the analytics and the insights piece of the business. So I think that there's more openness toward new technology and solutions now, mostly because people feel like they have to be, or they're going to be kind of left in the dust. I do think that there's been more focus on, on the things that will really drive value for clients, which is the insights.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody can collect data. From my point of view, you know, anything that can be automated or operationalized or to use technology to do these kind of rote tasks faster and easier is a benefit to the industry so that, you know, the folks, you know, from my perspective, it's going to be kind of like a survival of the fittest. You know, if you're a really good strategist and analyst and you understand how to interpret data in really meaningful ways, you know, you've got a long, long runway ahead of you. And I think if you're somebody who is really tactical in nature and are focused on tasks that can easily be automated or outsourced or operationalized, yeah, you're going to have a real tough road ahead of you.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you mentioned that consulting side, because we recently talked with the head of insights at LinkedIn, and we asked him, you know, what can market research do for you, because they do a lot internally. He said the exact same thing. He said, "There's if you gave us an educational arm, we need to know more about methodology, we need to know more about how we deal with the data that we have collected, and we need that expert insight from the market research industry."
Yeah, agree.
So one of my core theses right now is, As I look, you know, you and I experienced the whole disruption of paper and telephone interviews with, in fact, we drove that in many ways, with online data collection. And then mobile, although mobile, I would say, is slightly less disruptive because you could still do, you know, web-based surveys on mobile devices, albeit, in my opinion, poorly, or creating poor customer experiences.
Poorly.
Yeah. When I look forward, or even at the state right now, we have an Alexa in our house, and I and my family are purchasing products on it. Sometimes it works great, and sometimes we accidentally buy $3,000 worth of magic markers.
True story.
Which literally happened.
Yeah.
Air quotes. Yeah. No, it literally happened. But anyway, so I'm not saying that the technology is particularly working well, but In a world of voice, how are you seeing that disruption impacting the market research world, if at all?
Yeah, it's funny because when I think of Alexa, I almost don't think of it from a voice perspective. I think of it from a passive data collection perspective. Like, I think of all the data points that Alexa is gathering on a day-to-day basis, and how powerful that is. Like, the voice piece of it to me is sort of secondary. You know, when I think of voice or actual consumer stories, I almost think more of video and how impactful video now is at communicating people's brand experiences. You know, you look at YouTube and how effectively people are using it to complain about, you know, customer experiences or to advocate for new products or services. I mean, I think particularly among millennials and the younger generation, Gen Z, that video is just second nature, and it's a mode and method they're used to communicating in. And so to have the ability to have those one-to-one connections with folks, that to me is really powerful. And to be able to put a face to an experience is really powerful for brands. But with, like I said, with regards to Alexa, it's funny, but like I said, I think the voice piece of it is almost secondary for me, and I'm more focused on, gosh, think of all the conversations that people are having with Alexa every day and every single data point that's being gathered, and holy bananas, you could do a lot with that. That to me is really exciting.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, in every way, it points to the question of who will answer that, right? So who's going to address that? And do you think market research plays a role there? Are we going to have a, pardon the pun, voice in that? Or is it going to wind up being an outside company, a BI company, for example?
I think it really just depends on whether or not we've developed the analytical capabilities to work with those data sets. And I think that's a real defining factor, is are we capable of, as an industry, of wrapping our heads around those new data sources and being able to interpret and serve as a thought leader for those businesses. And I think that's where we have traditionally really struggled, is we tend to get real precious around primary research data and oh, well, you know, it's not methodologically perfect, or oh, the data wasn't collected in this way, and because of that, we shouldn't be using it. And I'm all for good statistical methods, for sure, but I do think that we have to be open to, hey, this is a different type of data set, and maybe it's not perfect, but here are like the four or five really deep insights that we can get from it, and we can combine it with these other data sources to find something really meaningful. I don't think we've been great about that so far. I feel like we've been really defensive about, oh, it has to be this way because it's the way it's always been. And that doesn't benefit us as an industry.
Yeah, sorry, I was butting in there. I get really passionate about this point. And I think that protective or defensive stance that market research has taken, at least for my career, the last two decades, has prevented us from participating in the boardroom. So in other words, and now it's because we're being stripped, literally stripped of the logistic responsibilities of data collection. But yet nobody is clearly answering or addressing the consumer, given the myriad of data sources, primary research being one of the larger ones, and now, to your point, voice being super important. If we do answer that question, I think it does. I really believe it gives market research a seat at the board meeting.
For sure. Well, and I also think that the onus is on us as an industry to start telling stories to clients in more interactive and engaging ways. I mean, I was just relaying this story from probably one of the first data presentations that I gave during my career, where I went into this big boardroom at 20th Century Fox to give this presentation on some movie testing that we had done. And of course, I had my 85 PowerPoint charts, and I was ready to talk through, every single data question, that was presented to me. I remember the head of the marketing at the time came in the room, and as soon as I started talking, he literally yawned, and then he was like, "Yeah, wake me up when the data is over." And it was so funny.
I think I presented that too for like 5 years.
Yeah, and I had some really amazing PowerPoint charts that I was ready to share, and he did not want to see them. But I think that's a really good reminder to us that, people in marketing or in the C-suite or in any executive role want to understand the context behind what you're presenting and what it means for the business. And that's where I think we get lost. We get so caught up in the numbers and what it means for the study that we don't connect it to the larger business issue of what's going to drive growth or change for that business.
So it was about 4 years ago that I did a study with eBay where it was comparing and contrasting eBay versus Amazon. And in the report, it was a fairly short 4-5 page PowerPoint, of course, charts and graphs, boring. And then the end had a consumer testimonial video.
Yeah.
That presentation wound up getting into the boardroom, and one of the board members said, "It's the first time we've had the voice of the customer present." So, and it's funny because it was just an outtake of a video snippet, right? I mean, it's like the most unsophisticated thing you could provide. But and yet that was the guiding principle, that was the voice that they used to ultimately make an important decision.
But it's also the most humane, it may be the most unsophisticated, but it was the most humane voice.
Or
in that
humanized.
Humanized, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because Annie Pettit has written she kind of wrote this whole blog series on humanizing research and how important it is, and I think we also are seeing more of a focus on firms that are trying to bring those consumer stories into the boardroom in many, more meaningful ways, and not to evangelize Vox Pompany, since they're one of the firms I advise. So full disclosure, I advise Vox Pompany. But it's one of the reasons I'm really excited about that technology, because they have figured out a way of not only bringing those real consumer stories into the boardroom, but also making it so easy now to edit video and to create show reels and to expedite that process. And that goes back to what we were talking about before, which is, do whatever you can to automate those rote activities and those non-value driven activities so that you can really focus on the insights. And that's what's really going to drive value to the industry.
So really quick, this is for free, but I want to be documented. My wife came up with what she and I think could be the best thing, advertising campaign for Vox Pompany.
Oh yeah, really? Do tell.
Vox Pompany good. That's all I got. Sorry. It's true though, we did. I don't know, this is what happens when you're old. All right.
Man, I am lost for a transition here. So who is bringing big change to the industry now, and who do you think we should be paying attention to?
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's really interesting. You know, I think it's easy to pay attention to all the hot, sexy technology companies that are coming into this space. I think that there's a lot of firms that are doing interesting work right now, and I can, you know, if I look at big full service research firms that I think are getting it right and doing the right things, I look at firms like MarketCast who have a, you know, a really smart acquisition strategy that is focused on, you know, adding companies to their portfolio that really augment and drive value for their business overall, so that they can focus on the more meaningful activities like the analytics and delivering value to their clients. So yeah, if I was going to call out a full service research company that I would say is one to watch, I would say MarketCast. I think Henry Shapiro has done a great job of building that firm, and he has a really hot acquisition strategy that I admire a lot. So that's one firm to watch. And more on the business intelligence reporting side of the business, I think InfoTools, New Zealand-based company. I'm sure many folks have heard of them. They have a hot new reporting product that they launched last year, which just keeps getting better and better, and has some AI and machine learning components of it, which I think are really smart and, again, really help expedite the analysis process and also provide more of a storytelling experience on the business intelligence front. And then if I, you know, just look at some of the new technologies that I think are really interesting and really changing the industry, of course, VoxPop.me is one of them. I really do believe in video insights. Like, I wouldn't be evangelizing that brand if I hadn't drunk the Kool-Aid and didn't think that the video insights they're providing are really providing, you know, meaningful insights to the C-suite. And then even firms like Street Bees, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Street Bees, but, you know, sort of how they're going out and recruiting people and using more of a community crowdsourcing aspect to how they're collecting data, and these micro survey platforms, which I think are really interesting, Street Bees being one of them, companies like Alpha and 1Q who are really steering away from these kind of traditional long 20 to 45 question surveys that, you know, are mind numbing and that people can't wait to stop taking. They're focused on more engaging ways of getting in front of consumers and on just like a little micro surveying basis. So those are some of the firms that I'm watching.
That I think are interesting.
Are you finding corporations having, you know, large brands having a problem paying for these services? There's two reasons that I could see it being difficult. One is sometimes they're trying to move to a SaaS model, and research has traditionally been transactional. And then the other is they don't neatly fit in a bucket like, oh, I did my qualitative and quantitative, you know, research.
Yeah. I'm finding now that corporate research buyers are less bucketed by quant versus qual and are more looking at what the end deliverable is. Like, are they going to get the result that they need out of the study? So I'm seeing less of that. I mean, I definitely think the licensing piece of it is still an issue. And Jamin, you and I probably know better than anyone, having gone into a situation where we're like, we've got this awesome platform, and it's less expensive, and everyone's going to love it, and they're going to license it immediately. And then it was like the sound of crickets. Because getting people to license and integrate software is really challenging.
Yeah.
It's really challenging because you're asking them not to only trust and believe in your product on a long-term basis, but you're asking them to make an operational change, to have behavioral change behind it, which is really tough. And I do think that there's probably less of a willingness to do DIY on the actual research operational level day to day than there is at the C-suite level. You know, the C-suite level is like, oh yeah, awesome, let's license this platform, it's going to cut our research costs in half. And the people that are actually doing the research day to day are like, oh my God, now I have to program something myself or do it myself. And it's really tough. That's where the behavior change comes into play. So I do think that the licensing is still challenging for a lot of folks, because it is moving from that transactional model, which, as we know, has driven the research industry for years, where people are just buying things on a project by project basis and asking them to make a longer term commitment.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, one of the things I see too is, and I think some of the companies that are licensing software but are doing it in a really smart way are also companies that yeah, maybe they license their software as a standalone application, but they also integrate with lots of other software packages. So they're not just completely reliant on selling their software in themselves. It's an API or an add-on or some enhancement to all these other platforms, and they're using those sales teams to also sell their licensing in.
All right, awesome. So we're going to end with this right hook. What is the number one problem that you are solving for your customers?
Well, I'm not really in the insights industry anymore, so it's not an insights-related activity. I mean, I advise a lot of market research firms, but I'm working on growth strategy, and so I would say that probably the number one issue that I'm solving is really getting CEOs and executive teams to focus more on working on the business versus in the business, which is a really important delineation, I think, for a lot of research firms. They're started by researchers who are very adept, who are quarterbacks at research and are great at doing all the ins and outs of the business, but maybe we're not brought up running a business or don't know the right activities to focus on to really grow their business. So I'd say, you know, that and, you know, really being a strategy and a thought partner, particularly for folks that don't have business partners, you know, making sure that they're really paying attention to all the things that drive growth in a business and keeping them focused on that versus on the day-to-day minutia, which is really, really easy to get drowned down in.
Yeah, that's the one. Identifying the blind spots that's such tremendous value. And the other is just maintaining accountability, right? Because to your point, it's super easy just to get caught up in the things that you know how to do well and are used to doing, as opposed to things that are going to move the business.
Well, and I think as human beings, we also have the tendency to gravitate toward things that are the easiest and the most pleasant. Yep. And those easy and pleasant things can also be things that do not drive value for the business.
Yep.
For instance, doing all your QuickBooks invoicing when you should be doing business development calls.
Right.
Yes, anyone can do QuickBooks invoicing and it's super satisfying. But is that a high-value activity for a business owner? No, it is not. So doing the activities that drive value, it's real hard to stay focused on those. Yeah, so I'm the check and balance for a lot of my clients.
And I love that. My guest today has been Kristen Luck. Kristen, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.